I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hollywood Life podcast. I am here with my amazing co-host, Bonnie Fuller. Hi, Bonnie.
Hey, guys. Hi.
Hello. We are so excited to chat with you about so much going on in Hollywood. And as always, make sure you stay tuned for the end of our chat as we talk to Mark Billy Billingham, who is on the Bonnie's new favorite show, Fox's Special Forces. He also was Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt's bodyguard. And he says some really interesting things about working for them. So stay tuned for that at the end of our chat here.
Yes. And don't forget to like our podcast and to follow us and to go to Hollywood Life for more information about everything that we discuss.
Yes, exactly. Everything that we talk about is just like a tidbit of what is on the site. So always go to HollywoodLife.com and always return for our podcast every Tuesday. So let's jump into this, Bonnie. I think the biggest news this week was that Kylie Jenner finally, on a random Saturday, decided to tell everybody her kid's name nearly 11 months after she welcomed a son, and then said his name was Wolf, and then said his name was no longer Wolf. Now we know in a cute little Instagram post that his name is Air.
Right. Yeah, it was so random in the middle of Saturday. And actually, it was pretty much at the same time as the Lisa Marie Presley funeral, which so many people were paying attention to. And not only did she finally tell us his name, but she posted a picture, two pictures of him. So you could see his face, because so far we'd only really seen like a finger, the back of his head. Yeah. And he is so cute. He looked so much like Stormy. Didn't you think?
I thought he looked, you know, it's funny, actually. I think Stormy has a little bit rounder of a face. Like, she kind of has Kylie's face. Whereas I feel like Air looks more like Travis.
Really?
Yes. Stormy is totally Kylie's doppelganger. I feel like Air is after Travis a little bit more. But gosh, he is so precious and so cute. And I loved that his name, so she said his name is pronounced as Air, and it's A-I-R-E, and it's of Hebrew origin, and it means like strength of a lion, which right. She thinks really beautiful, because that's then she beautiful. Steps out wearing a big lion head at the Schiaparelli show at Couture Week. So maybe that's why she decided to announce. She wanted people to know. Now she's entering
the connection, that there was some kind of a connection. Well, yeah. I do disagree with you on Air. I think he looks, and Stormy, I think they look like such a blend of both Kylie and Travis, and they definitely look like siblings. And they're both so cute. But you know, your theory that potentially that's why she announced it, because she was going to be wearing this dress, which has actually stirred up a lot of controversy. Mm-hmm. It was a Schiaparelli dress, and she went to the Schiaparelli show, and it was a strapless gown. If any of you have not seen the photo of her wearing this dress, then come to Hollywood Life, because we've got stories about it. It's in our galleries on Paris Couture, and it is this beautiful lion head that looks very real.
So
and it
real.
Really, really freaked. I'm diverging from talking about Kylie and Travis and Air, but it looks so real that it created a lot of backlash, because people were like, how can you wear a lion head and you're promoting, you know, lions being killed, abused, and poached, et cetera, et cetera. Except that two things. PETA, which is the organization for the ethical protection and treatment of animals, came out in support and said, no. This is good because this was all made from natural materials. It involved no use of any sort of real lion hair or lion anything. And that if we want to honor lions and this animals. Is a creation of art, it's like a sculpture.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with representing a lion with, you know, these beautiful natural materials. And Irina Shayk, who actually wore the gown in the show itself, also came out and said the same thing. This is a piece of art and it honors lions and, you know, it doesn't involve any touching of a real lion. If anything, it's celebrating lions. And so I do think that possibly your theory could be correct.
Yeah.
But the other thing that we're hearing from a source about the name is that it could also indicate that he's an heir, H-E-I-R, because it's pronounced the same. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the heirs to the Kylie Travis fortunes.
The empire.
Which they will, both children and any other children that Kylie has and Travis has will be heirs to big fortunes.
It's true. I definitely know that Kylie has always had a thing for lions and things relating to them because she's a Leo. She was born in August. And so I think that definitely has like
some. It all comes together.
But I completely agree with you. And I agree with PETA and PETA saying like how that outfit actually deters people from hunting and wanting to use these furs and these
like a real lion carcass
because horrible. It shows that you can recreate these things while keeping these animals alive and in their natural habitat. I thought it was her wildest look, and I also really liked it. Like, I don't know, I really liked it. I was like, wow. This is cool.
Well, Allie, I could see you in wearing that Schiaparelli dress with your gorgeous red hair.
You would look like
a lioness yourself.
Look like a lioness. I think maybe I'll wear it as my wedding dress. That would definitely be shocking.
The other interesting thing, though, is that she did do this announcement following her split from Travis. And, you know, we're hearing that she just got fed up that Travis would not make that final commitment, you know, put an engagement ring on it and commit to being monogamous with her and making a commitment to get married and them be forever as a family.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, her Met Gala look last May when she dressed up as a bride was like her final very obvious message to him, like propose or we're done. And he couldn't pull the plug. I don't know, but we have heard at Hollywood Life, we have a great exclusive that is on our site that says that Kylie's been really leaning on her sister, Kendall, who just went through a breakup herself from Devin Booker and obviously handled that really gracefully and elegantly. It was very under the radar versus Kylie and Travis, which has been made pretty public, that Kylie has really just been like leaning on Kendall to help her kind of go through it. And they just have just a really tight sisterly bond that is stronger than ever, our insider saying.
Well, they've always been close, like really close. They've always done so much together. And you think about it, from what we know from our sources is that Kendall also was really having the same issue with Devin, that he would not commit. Mm-hmm. And that's why they broke up just after Courtney's wedding in the first place. And then he did say that he was going to put more effort into their relationship and that he was going to make that, you know, put the relationship on a front burner and that there would be a long-term like commitment to it. In other words, heading to an engagement. And I guess he didn't do it. So can't wait around forever if you want that for your life.
Agreed. These boys, they just got to, I don't know if it's how the Kardashians pick them or the Jenners pick them, or if it's the guys being annoying, you know? But well,
and the thing is, these are women who are so successful. They're just so accomplished. They're really gorgeous. They're really, really wealthy. Mm-hmm. They're self-made. They've bought businesses going. I've met them both, not in a while, but they were both lovely, like nice.
Yeah.
So like, what else do these guys want in a relationship?
Yeah.
But you know what? Then ultimately Kylie and Kendall will, you know, they have to find somebody who can appreciate them for who they are.
Right. And not be like not offended, not be, what's the word? Like
intimidated by their success.
That's exactly it. Well, and speaking of kids, we did really want to mention quickly that during Lisa Marie Presley's memorial service, it was revealed that her daughter, Riley Keough, actually had welcomed a daughter herself, making Lisa Marie a grandmother shortly before her passing. We don't know much about the daughter, but other than Riley had mentioned it via her husband, who gave the eulogy on her behalf.
And then we did see a photo. In fact, we have it on Hollywood Life of Riley with the baby in a pouch coming off, it looks like a private plane, returning after the funeral that was at Graceland back to LA. The baby looks about, I would say, 7-8 months.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a newborn.
No, I mean, I'm happy that Lisa Marie got to have the experience of being a grandmother, but also just so sad that this happened. She has 14-year-old twins. She had a granddaughter, and that she left, that she's not going to be able to be there for them for as they grow up.
Yeah. And I do know as well. So the mini series Daisy Jones and the Six, which stars Riley as Daisy Jones, comes out soon on Amazon. And I have a friend whose parent is in the series and said that Lisa Marie was able to come. She came and visited on set.
Oh, good.
We got to see some of the episodes and watch her daughter kind of in action, which is really special as it's her last project, and it is coming out in mere weeks. So I will be interested to see if Riley ends up doing any press. I have been thinking about how she was slated to speak and ended up not,
right.
Which just makes me think she is
just too overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's her mom, and it was so sudden. And also, we can't forget that Riley was close to her brother who took his own life just a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's been an awful lot of like just heartbreak and tragedy in that family that Riley has had to cope with.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm really glad she's been married. Her marriage is about 7 years old, so she's happily married. She's got a very supportive husband. She's got a baby. So, and she's got a grandmother and twin sisters. So she's got support, but still, to lose your mom, she's very young. 33 is young to lose your parent.
Absolutely. Yeah. Her mom and yes, her brother Benjamin a year ago. So it's been a lot. It's been a long year.
One thing it is that was so kind of, also poignant is that this is her daughter's Elvis's first great grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I guess it's Priscilla's first great grandchild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just wait and see, like with press and stuff. I'm sure she'll, if she, you know, starts to feel like it, speak out in her own way about it. But, that was definitely a heartbreaking memorial service to watch. And then some other news that has come out that we definitely wanted to talk about was Alec Baldwin being charged with 2 counts of involuntary manslaughter by the Santa Fe district attorney following the shooting death of Helena Hutchins on the set of Rust.
Yes.
So Bonnie, what are your thoughts on that?
I can't say that I was surprised. You know, it was so high profile. It just, you know, seemed inevitable that he would be charged. And I think we all accept that it was not intentional, but listen, they have to the district attorney has to do their job, and he's so high profile to have just let him off with no charges, probably from their point of view, would have been a really bad example. And people would have felt that because he was a celebrity, that he was getting better treatment or special treatment. And I think that, you know, in the justice system, you can't be perceived that way. I do think this is going to be a super highly watched trial. And apparently it's not going to be that long before it comes to trial, just a few months. Like, we're not talking about a trial that's not going to happen for a year, a year and a half. We spoke to a New Mexico criminal lawyer, and he said it should probably come up to trial by September. And I just think that there's going to be tremendous amount of interest. And, you know, the last celebrity trial we had was Johnny Depp. We saw how people just followed along with, and that was a civil trial, like with a trial with where he was in contention with his ex-wife, Amber Heard, for damages. But this is a criminal trial. Like, he could go to jail. I wouldn't be surprised if he is sentenced to maybe not a long term. For one of the charges, the maximum is 18 months, but for the other, there's a maximum of 5 years. I don't expect that he will get 5 years, but he could get a year.
Yeah, I go back and forth with this, and my Twitter feed has kind of like regurgitated some fellow actors actually tweeting about the situation. And one said that they've been shot and killed on camera many times. They've also been the one pulling the trigger. Said, I'm an actor, not a firearm specialist. I may know how to check a weapon for a bullet, but no way can I differentiate a half blank from a live round. That's right. What an armorer is for. Right. And I really do agree that on these sets, you trust that two other people in line are doing their jobs so you can do yours. And so
it's still like, how did a live bullet get on set, period, let alone into the gun.
Right. And so in my opinion, if I were, say, a jury member, which maybe it's good I'm not, I don't necessarily think that that's Alec Baldwin's fault. I think he was doing his job as an actor, trusting that. So maybe, are you not supposed to trust your colleagues? Is that what this is? You know, I just don't know if there's like much negligence on his part other than him maybe not triple checking. And is that the protocol? Is it the protocol? I guess this is what they have to figure out in the case. Is it protocol for an actor to always triple check and to know what is in his gun when he is acting? You know, the district attorney said in their thing, you know, don't point a gun at someone if you don't want to kill them. He was acting. He was told where to put his gun. Well, he was playing his character.
I think why he's being hit with these charges is because he was a producer of the film. And apparently there were accusations or allegations that proper safety protocols weren't being followed. Mm-hmm. So he's being held responsible more as a producer, because as a producer, it's different than just being an actor on set where you're handed the gun and you trust that all the other people who are hired to do the job of making sure that the gun is safe have done it. But he's a producer, so he had more responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. Are they charging all of the producers, though? No, it was just the armorer and Alec who fired the gun.
Right. I still feel like the deeper mystery, I mean, he's charged as a jury will decide, but whatever did their investigation turn up? How did live ammunition get on that set?
Right.
Because is it like, how can that be an accident that somebody would load a live bullet. And there could have been more. What we also don't know is, okay, it went off once and Helena was hit and killed. Were there other live bullets? Like when they took the gun, did they find other live bullets? Or was only one live bullet? In either case, how did that happen?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it never should happen. And now there are, I mean, there always were rules in place, but you know, you talk to people who are on Marvel sets and on Disney sets, and there are protocols to ensure that this does never happen. And so, I mean, like you said, I'm interested to find out what they found, because there must be something that we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, or did they uncover that? Or is that something that's going to come out in trial? Does the armorer know how that happened?
Right.
Because in either case, like, nobody has been charged with putting the live bullet into the gun.
Correct.
No one's accusing Alec Baldwin that he put the bullet in there. No. So far, nobody's been accused of putting a live bullet into the gun. So how did it get there?
It's a great question, Bonnie. Hopefully we find out sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, guys, we have an incredible interview coming up next. Billy Billingham, who talks all about his career in the Special Forces, and also
it's called the SAS. It's the equivalent to Special Forces. He's British, so it's their equivalent to Special Forces here.
Yep. And bodyguarding for celebs and so much more. So enjoy that conversation and come back again next Tuesday.
Yeah. And if you've been watching Special Forces, you know how tough he is. You are going to want to hear him tell us all about secrets of the Special Forces set, as well as what it was like working for Brad and Angelina as their personal bodyguard.
Yep. All right, guys, enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've got a very interesting and, for me, a little bit terrifying guest.
Oh my goodness. It's going to be such a good guest today. I'm really excited for this conversation. And we're honored to have him on here. So Bonnie, I will let you introduce him today.
Okay. Well, I hope that a lot of you have watched Special Forces, World's Toughest Test on Fox. And if you haven't watched yet, you must start, because we have got one of the stars here who is a celebrity in his own right, but he's also something called a staff, which means he is kind of in charge of directing the celebrities on this show. So everybody welcome Billy Billingham. Hey, Billy.
Hey guys, Bonnie, Ali, thank you for inviting me onto your podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, and let's fire away. Let's go for it.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you on. I know, as Bonnie had told you before we started recording here, that we've had Carly Lloyd on the podcast. We're in talks to have Hannah Brown on the podcast. There's so many people that you're kicking them into high gear, and now they want to come talk about it with us. So we're excited to talk to the source.
Yes. Well, you started off with a cast just about, I think we just had the third week, though the first episode was really two episodes, and you started off with 16 celebrities, including Jamie Lynn Spears and Mel B and athletes like Mike Piazza, and you're already down to, I believe, 9. Like, they're falling fast, and it's already day 4. Why? Yeah. First of all, Billy, you and there's three other staff, you are the ones who come up with all of the tasks that they do every day. You oversee everything. You meet with the contestants and, you know, figure out their mindsets. But first of all, why would a celebrity agree to be in a show like this, which really is a physical and mental endurance test? You're out in the desert in Jordan for 10 days, and every day feels like about 100 days.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question, Bonnie. And you know what? It's the exact same question we asked when they sat in front of us. Why are you here? You know, because, you know, I don't know why, but, you know, the public's perception of celebrities is they've got it all together. They've got great lives. They've got a lot of money. They've got everything at their feet. Well, actually, that's not really true. It's, you know, they suffer just like we do. They have the same problems we do. And for them, it's actually harder because they don't really have anyone that they can trust and turn to, because, you know, it's like the paparazzi or somebody gets hold of a bit of information that the whole thing's spread across the world. So that question we do ask, why are you here? And we do know the answer to that, because it's the same reason as everybody that comes on that show is there. And that is to find out, they want to find out who they really are. Particularly celebrities, because they've spent such a period of their life, and some of them all their life, being in the limelight, being told how great they are, and being told what they are, and being directed and being waited on, and being having everything almost done for them. They want to know who they really are. They want to be peeled back away from all these charade type lifestyles and be shown, actually, I can do something I never thought I could do. And that's why they come. There's no prizes. There's no money at the end of it. There's no, you know, win or lose. It's a pass or fail in terms of you got to the end or you didn't. And actually, I always say this, it doesn't matter how far they go on this journey, because it's a personal journey to everybody. Every single person's come for a different reason. Well, I would say if there's one common denominator, it's that, to find out who they are. And we look at every single person. We're not looking for the fastest, the fittest, the strongest. We're actually looking for you. Who are you? And we don't break you down. We peel you back. We peel back all these, this Instagram charade you put, this outside your front door charade you put, what you really like. And once you can get somebody back to their vulnerability, you just see, like, it's almost like someone's taking the world off their shoulders. Like, wow. And then they can be reborn again and live this life of, wow, this is who I am. This is, and physically, mentally, emotionally, they're very vulnerable now. And we're not there to make fools of them or anything like that. We're there to, okay, say to me, okay, this is where you're at. Just like everybody else, same level as it. And now let's see what you can do. And that is the reason they come on and why they want to be there.
Well, now the tasks, the things that they have to do, are all things that you and the other three staff have done, because you were a member of the SAS in Great Britain, which, you know, for our audience, would you say that's like the special forces here in the US? Is that the sort of similar?
Yeah, let me explain it to you. The Special Air Service Regiment is probably the finest fighting elite force in the world. And I can say that because I know that. We actually formed the American Tier 1 Special Forces, SEAL Team and Delta, which is your top elite Tier 1 force of Special Forces. So, yeah, that's who we are. You know, we have a lot of history. Everyone in the UK and most parts of the world, if you say Special Forces, they'll know exactly what they're talking about. There's only two units in the UK that are special forces, and that is SAS, Special Air Service, Special Boat Service. We all do the same selection. It's just that one kind of go like the SEALs do. They deal on the water, and the SAS deals on everything else around the planet, every other environment. They're the only special forces in the UK. In the US, there's different tiers of special forces, you know, from the Rangers to the Green Berets to SEALs to Delta. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. We're very small, but, you know, and on all our operations, like your tier one units deal with, are all strategic level. So what we operate, the sort of operational tempo that we get involved in is world changing. It's, you know, it's saving hundreds of thousands of lives, or it's changing policies and directions for the globe, basically. So that's who we are. That's who the special forces are in UK, and it's the SAS. So yeah, I'm from the SAS. The other British guy, Foxy, is from the SBS, Special Boat Service. And we have Remy from SEALs and Rudy from Marine Recon. So we've got two Brits, two UK.
But the tasks, like to be in a car that gets dropped into water and having to escape as it's submerged and walking across rope across a 300-foot canyon, these are things that, yeah, Hannah Brown is doing and Dwight Howard, who's a basketball player, are doing. But these are, which are, you know, like I said, terrifying to me. But these are all things that you've done. So you come up with these tasks because they're all things you've done.
Yeah. Everything that we do on this course is based on reality that we've done on operations. Obviously, it replicates the same sort of problem. Like the vehicle dunking into the water, that represents an helicopter crash going into water, because we spend a lot of time in helicopters, and some of us have been in helicopter situations where it's gone into water or crash land. So it's all replicating something that we've done for real. You know, like you'll see a driving task on the next one where they end up being in explosions being fired at. That represents something that I've actually personally done, and the rest of the guys have done. So we write the tasks. That we are the directors, we are the producers. There's nobody steps in our way. We write it. There's no script. There's no stop, retake. There's no sort of preempting anything and redoing anything at all. It literally runs. We run it as a course, like as if it was a military course for anybody. Mm-hmm. And then the camera's filled with 24 hours a day. If we decide 1 second, okay, we're going to stop, and then we're going to go start running that way for 10 miles, the cameras have to run with us.
Wow.
That's how it runs. But it is all based, it's exactly like you said, on operational things that we've been involved in. And everything in the special forces world is petrifying. You know, it is. Crossing those gorges on the ropes that you see, which the, I don't know, 200-300 feet up. Yeah, if you fall, you're probably going to die. We've done that in places like Afghanistan when there's an enemy out there trying to kill you, when you're carrying a lot of equipment and it's done at night. And you've got, you can't afford to say you can't do it or go slow, because you've got 30 other people from your unit coming behind you. So it represents all that. So that little bit of snoring you can hear is my bulldog. He's down here. So that's what that represents, you know. So everything is the fear of heights, the fear of water, because that's what we do. Everything we do is behind enemy lines in petrifying terrors. And on top of what we have is an enemy trying to kill you. They haven't got an enemy trying to kill them, except for the directing staff, us. We're actually not going to try and kill anybody. We're just going to try and push them through their fear factors and a place that they never dreamed they'd be. I mean, when would, you know, the chef of a doctor off the TV or be hanging off a rope 200 feet high in the mountains? Never. So this is a great opportunity for them. But like you said, all based on real things that we've done. You know, you'll see them carrying big, weird objects up and down over horrendous terrain. That represents carrying a body, a human body like we have, you know. And that, well, when do you carry tires? And you don't carry tires, of course you don't. But that replicates ammunition that we've had to carry on the battlefield, or a body that's been injured, you know. Wow. So, yeah, it's all based on real sort of stuff that we've done.
And how did you decide that you wanted to get involved with something making it a television show? You know, I think that sometimes there's like a fear that, you know, when you give something like a TV treatment, it maybe diminishes it or anything like that. And I don't feel like that's the case here. But how did you decide that you wanted to be a part of this?
It's funny you should ask the question again, because my whole army career, I spent the whole all of my life denying who I was, where I was, because I had to. And then when I left the military, I had to get a job. And, you know, the military's over. I had 30-odd years that I'd served. And now I've got to go and find a job. Mm. And the first job I stepped into was into the limelight, bodyguarding celebrities. So I was now gone from this life of clandestine, hiding in the shadows, to, whoa, almost on every magazine, and trying to hide from cameras instead of people shooting at me with guns and the shooting with cameras. So that was really daunting.
Yeah.
And it took some getting used to. And that over that period of time, there was a number of shows, and there's always been shows going out on doing survival or, extreme sports or whatever it is. And they always tend to lean towards anybody from the military to give them advice and help them steer and keep it safe and put realism to it. So I was getting approached right from the word go before I left to say, hey, would you come and have a look at this program? Would you come and advise on this film? Would you come and do this? And, you know, like I say, it took a while to decide what I wanted to do, but I needed to work. I needed a job. So I went into the bodyguarding side of it. And then I got asked and asked and asked, will you come and do this program? Will you do that? I did my due diligence, looked at it so you don't make a fool of yourself or you get involved in something that you really don't want to get involved in or give away any secrets that might harm national security or our armed forces. And of course, we'd never in a million years do that. So we had to vet everything that we did. And then when the show that you're watching now went out in the UK about 7 years ago, and I got asked to do that. Firstly, I stood back and looked at him, hang on, let me see what it's really all about. And then when I realized what it is about, it's not talking about special forces operations and tactics and skills. It's about people. Mm-hmm. We're just there to add authenticity based on our lifestyle and what we've got and give direction as, let's get this straight. So we are not psychologists. We don't have all the answers, but we've been in places where people don't want to ever go and wouldn't dream to go. We've had to be there, but we've learned lessons from it. And we're able to give direction to people who have gone through dark spaces, people who've lost people, bereavement, relationship breakdown. You know, we've been there, you know, on many occasions around the globe because of what we do. So we're able to give advice. But I'll reiterate that we are not experts. We can say, this is what you need to do now. You need to pick yourself up. You need to go forward. And this is why, because we've done it on numerous occasions. So when we got asked to do the program, I looked at it and went, yeah, I can give that advice. I can, without giving any secrets away, I can push these people to a great place. So that's why we got involved in it, how I got involved in it. I got involved right at the start with the British version. I didn't do the very first series because I wanted to look at it and see what it was all about. And then they came and approached me, will you come along and do it with us? I went, yeah, okay. So I went and I joined on the second series. And I've been there ever since. And then Australia approached us to do the same thing in Australia. Went across to Australia. We started doing it over there. We did within the first three series, it went to number one show over there. And again, because it's therapeutic and it helps people outside of the show. And I'll guarantee you now, you know, when people look at it, for the contestants or recruits, you know, your celebrities that we've got, they walk away better people. You can ask anyone. They've learned so much about themselves. What is important to you? What? And it's not materialistic. And it's not about statistics. It's not about your status. It's about your family, your life, your health, and helping other people. That's what they walk away with. You know, and that's invaluable. So you learn that from being on the show. It's not about us, DS. We're steering in the ship. We're putting you through your paces. And we're very straightforward about that. There's no concessions for anybody. You come on our course, you volunteer, you're going to be screamed at, you're going to be shouted at, you're going to be pushed. It's not personal. There's a reason behind everything we do. So that's the beauty of the show, and that's why I got involved in it. And like I say, I go off at a little tangent. I always do this. My wife kills me when I go into conversation. But so that person sat in front of us, when we've peeled them back and helped them to rise another 2 foot. Shame for Dwight Howard, he's now 27 foot, but you know, it helps them. But everybody watching that show, there's so many people who look up to these people as role models and go, wow, if Dwight Howard can talk about his personal problem, I can do it, you know. And I know that because my phone goes mental the next day about, thank you, you've really helped me through a dark space. I was in a real bad place because of what X, Y, and Z. You've really helped me, you give me advice, and you know. You know, and it really helps so many people. And that is the beauty of the show. So I was proud to be involved in it. And I love what I do. I really do. I love it.
Well, it seems like the celebrities who are on this show don't seem to hold anything against you guys, even though, I mean, you do yell at them and you are peeling them back, as you say. But like, you know, on the show last week, Tony Scaramucci, the Mooch, right. You know, who had worked in the White House, he's made lots of money, like he's this big wig. And I mean, he was a mess physically, emotionally, after trying to complete a task where he was a leader. But, you know, you see the interviews after, when they're back, I guess, and they really do seem to appreciate what they've learned. Now, who on out of the crew here, the cast, really surprised you in terms of how they handled things? I mean, so far I have to say I'm really surprised by Kenya Moore. I mean, she's been really tough in terms of being able to handle both the physical and the emotional. Whereas Mel B seemed like she was, but then she's already off the show. She had enough.
Yeah, well, everybody's got a breaking point, and the truth is we don't know what that is. No one knows what's inside your head or my head. You know, when people are going through a hard time, only you can say, really, that is enough. We can see it from a physical side by watching it, make sure we don't push people too far. So when you go back to who surprises, everyone surprises us to a degree. But what I will say, having done this now for a number of years, is it is very much about mindset. And the women are strong. Mm-hmm. Women are so powerful in the mind. And the truth is this, right? If you've got a strong mind and a determined mind, you will go to a place that you never ever thought you would go, and your body will follow. What slows you down is your body will go so far, but it will break if you're not careful. So you have to stop at some point. But women are great at you know, some of the ladies, you know, like Kenya Moore, like you say, she's, you know, I don't know what her fitness level was before, but mindset is just so strong and so powerful. And I'm sure she's hurting, but she puts on that brave face and she just gets on with it. She really does. Beverly Mitchell, I mean, she weighs about 2 kilos wet. She's tiny. Mm-hmm. Look, she was carrying the equivalent of her body weight from day one. And, you know, she went out this week, but that was amazing. Sorry, what the public don't see is they're working 18 hours a day. We push them 18 hours a day. They're hardly getting any sleep. If they're lucky, they'll get 2 hours sleep a night, if they're lucky. Wow. They're on food deprivation, sleep deprivation.
Wow.
You know, they're being pushed mentally, physically, and it's everything from, you know, you want to go to the bathroom. We take everything away from them. And there's a reason behind it, like I say. And they want to go to the bathroom. They've got to wake somebody up at 2 a.m. to go with them. They're not allowed to go anywhere on their own. That replicates what we do, you know, beyond the enemy lines. You don't go wandering off anywhere on your own. Everywhere you go, you go in pairs. So someone's watching your back all the time. That's what that replicates. So, you know, they're being put through so much pressure, so much stress. So surprise me, all of them do. Overall, if I had to say one group, the ladies, very powerful, very powerful. And I found this in UK and Australia and in the States already. But I mean, you know, you look at Anthony Scaramucci. He's not a gym buff. He's not an athlete. He's still there with athletes. These are some of your best athletes. Danny Amendola is a machine. Look, Dwight Howard is a machine. Mike Piazza. I mean, he is one of the people who's got all of it. He's got the physical and the mental. His body's breaking a little bit now. He's getting tired because he's a little bit older than the others. But yeah, so everybody's surprised. Not surprises. We kind of know where we can go. But then you get the little people who go, wow, where did you just come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Beverly, if you looked at Beverly on day one, it would be easy because I know what weights they're carrying. I know what they're doing. You go, this will be interesting. But smashing through. You know, those 4 days are like 4 months to them.
They are. I can testify just like, watching.
Like I say, it's worth telling the public. That's 18 hours a day they get. And they're lying in their beds not knowing when we're going to come in. They don't see a schedule of what they're doing each day. They only know what they're doing when they hear our voices screaming up from the top of the balcony going, get on parade. And then, you know, you're in bed, you've just fell asleep, you've got to jump out of bed, you've got to put your wet clothes on because that's part of it. So you have two sets of clothing, one wet, one dry. And if you don't stick to that discipline, you're going to bed with wet clothes. That ain't nice. That's even worse. So they're jumping out of bed at 2:30 in the morning, putting their wet clothes on, out on the parade square. They have no idea what they're going to do. They have no long how long it's going to be. They're totally in our control. So you really have got to, if you could think of it and go, well, you know what? That is what an achievement for every single one of them.
Allie, are you signing up?
Oh my goodness. I don't know if
I've already got your details. Fox will send you the
I will say that, like, when you say that about, like, the mental willpower, though, it is true. And my parents and I talk about that a lot, actually, because my parents are coaches. And, like, sometimes when you put your mind to something, like, I ran a whole marathon with, or a half marathon. It was not a whole marathon. I ran a half marathon, but ran the whole thing. I did not train a single second. And I was just like, I'm going to run it. And I did. And it hurt a lot the next day. And I probably should have taken breaks. But I did the whole thing. Like, it's just that kind of, you put your mind to it and you end up kind of surprising yourself a little bit. I am curious, you kind of mentioned it briefly before. So you've done the British version, you've done the Australian version, now you've done the American version. What would you say is, like, the biggest difference, at least between, like, Americans and the Brits and the Australians? And, like, did you like one better than the other?
You know, I think the skeleton of the whole thing, whatever you want to call it, the template is the same throughout, you know. It's just the way of thinking. You know, Americans think different to Brits. They seem to want more explanations of things. Hmm. Brits will just go, let's go do it, you know. And
stiff upper lips.
I'm not saying they're tougher, but Brits don't ask too many questions. They go, right, bang, you're going, and we're going to do this.
Okay.
Go, well, why are we doing that? And how are we doing that? I ain't got time to explain to you. I told you this on day one. There's a reason why you're doing it. You know, but they want explanations. So it takes a little while to break down those barriers. So stop asking questions. Just get on with it.
Wait.
And that's why a bit sharp and a bit, because we have to, because we literally haven't got time.
Right.
We have not got time. At the cold light of day, when it's all over, and, you know, then you can figure it out. Go, oh, now I understand why. We sat in those vehicles for 2 hours. It replicates this. Like I say, sitting around, I mean, how boring. Yeah, it's boring. But I'll tell you what it does. It triggers with your mind. It gets you thinking about things. And that's what we want to see. How are they going to react now? What are they going to do about it? Hmm. And we don't mind. And they get so wound up and tired, Americans do, with failing. And it's not failing. Not getting the best results. And they struggle. A lot of them struggle with fighting back and going, you know what, so what, I'll go again.
Mm.
And that's what we're after. We're not worried about you getting knocked on your backside. We want to see how you react and perform when you get back up, because that's what we're interested in, because that's who the real you is. We all get knocked down. And like you were just saying there, Ali, you know, you just put your mind to, or said to yourself, I'm going to do this marathon. And you did it. It doesn't matter how you did it. And the only person you're challenging is yourself anyway. And too many people get wrapped up about what everybody else thinks. Don't worry about what anybody else thinks. I'm 57 years old. I can run with 20-year-olds. I can run at speed as well. And every day, what speed did you do this? Do you want to challenge? I don't want to challenge you. I've done all that. I'm challenging myself, and I'm happy with what I'm doing. But the also to that, what you said there, you know, if you put your mind to it, you know, there's an old saying, put your mind to it, you can do anything you want. That's not quite true. That's not true at all. Because if that was true, I'd be an astronaut and I'd be a multimillionaire. Yeah.
Right.
I'd be president.
But I certainly can go, you know what? You know, when I've had people tell me, oh, no, you shouldn't do that. You won't be able to do that. And I'm not being disrespectful. I'm like, okay, I hear what you're saying because you're an expert at this, but I'm going to try anyway. I'm going to give it a go. So I'll try. And I know that they're right. And most of the time they are right. But you know what? By attempting to do something, I'm in a better place than just sitting back and being told I ain't going to do it.
100%.
And no matter what that is, where I am in my life now, I never wanted to be in TV. But I was trying for other goals, and all of a sudden these avenues opened up, and I went, you know what? That gives me options.
Mm-hmm.
Get many options. If you sat on the couch saying you're going to do it, mm-hmm. you'll get more options by getting off the couch and going, I'm going to go. Don't be afraid to make a fool of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's really great advice. Get up off the couch. And if you, it's like, if you don't take 100% of the shots, you're never going to get any of them. You mentioned that you were a celebrity bodyguard after you came out of the SAS, and you worked actually for Brad and Angelina and protected them and their children. What was that experience like? And what was the hardest thing about that? I mean, it has to be extremely different from being in the SAS. Yeah.
Firstly, I'll say I was grateful to have that opportunity. And with everything I do, again, and I'll say every day is a school day. You know, I took on that job with the profession and the skill set that I have. They had a skill set and a job they wanted to do. My job was to protect them while they did that and allow them to do that or find other options for them. Simple as that. And as soon as we establish that boundary straight away, I'm not starstruck by anybody, I'm none of this stuff. You've employed me to do a job and I'm very proud about what I'm doing and, you know, take it very serious. I don't want to make a fool of myself. So when I approached the job with Brad and Angelina, who happened to be the number one celebrities on the planet at the time, I put that noise to the side. I'm not interested in that. Why am I interested? What do you want me to do? What can I do? I toned down all the skill sets that I'd had of 27 years of being in the military, you know, working in hostile environments, traveling, planning, organizing, dealing with suffering quickly on the spot. I toned all that down to suit my new clients, which was the celebrities. So that's what I did. But then when I worked with these people, those as well as other celebrities I worked with, I watched them, their lives, and how they, and you know, like for Brandon and Angie, I learned so much from them on time management. Their time management is phenomenal. You know, people don't ever see that. And of course, you shouldn't see it. If you're doing a good bodyguard job, they shouldn't do it. And I think I did it well because, you know, from their timings are impeccable and they work so hard. That was the other thing. I thought, I'm going to get a great life. I'm going to be flying around in jets. I'm going to be drinking champagne. This is going to be awesome. Geez, I was working as hard as I was in the military.
Wow.
I came home knocking out 18 hours a day because there's a lot to do. Because what you don't see with these people, they'll get up in the morning. Family time is the first thing they'll do. They'll spend time with their children and themselves, and they get themselves together. They do all this organizing and making the family better. Then the children have to get to school. That's done. Then they'll sit before they go on. If one of them's on a film set or both, that's all. They're doing the scripts. They're doing the rehearsal. They're doing their own planning themselves. They're getting into the frame of mind, ready to go to work. If they're not doing that, they're working on a charity project. Unbelievable. Non-stop giving. And I sat back and watched and thought, you know what? That is, it's truly amazing. That's what people should be talking about when you talk about these people generally. And I can do it because I've done it and I've followed their lead. That's what I do now. But, you know, so time management, their giving and their every single one of them, every celebrity I've ever worked with, they've got that platform and they use it well. I have never seen anybody not use it well. You know, they don't get the credit for all and they don't want it, actually. They don't want to be patted on the back every 2 minutes. So when I work with Brandon and Angie, that's what I got. I sat with them directly and said to them, this is what we can do, this is what I do. If I have to grab hold of you, don't take it personal, there's a reason behind it. If I have to tell you you can't go to that venue, there's a reason. And I'm telling you right now, they never once questioned it. I didn't do it because I didn't want to do it. I was lazy. There was a reason behind it. But what I would do is find an alternative for them. We can't go to the venue. I can't secure it. There's only me. There's this. However, let's do this. And they'll go, okay, Billy, that's fine. You know, don't just give them a problem, give them a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. But, you know, I wouldn't be pressured into, oh, but we really need to. No, that's not going to happen. Not on my watch.
Mm-hmm.
And they listened to it. They were very respectful. Again, it's about respect. I had so much respect for them. They had respect for me. And it never goes anywhere else. And it has to stay professional as well. You have to be very close when you're doing bodyguard, not to get too personal with them. You know, you know everything about them. You have to know everything about them. But don't get too familiar because you've got a job to do. Right. And the minute you let your guard down, everything you've done is forgotten. And I never allow that. And I can touch wood and say, well, that never happened because it didn't. Not with any of my clients. So, yeah, that's what it was like. But it was hard work. So what I found was, I was surprised by, was how much time they do put into other things and the hours they work. It's crazy. I'm like, how are they doing this? And, you know, time management. And respect, it was just, yeah. And time management was probably the biggest thing.
Well, you also are devoting a time to do work for charity too, the giving of your time. And you've got a special connection to Haiti, I understand. And you've just launched a new military-inspired accessories collection called Dumain Partners. That you're launching, and it's all made in Haiti, but you have another collection, I think, that was also made in Haiti before this too.
Yeah. So basically, just to put you in the picture with where I am with this, Dumain is a business. looking at charity, I've been around the world, done charity, I do boxing for charity, I've done runs for charity, and I never really understood what charity was all about. Charity is about giving, but charity is about sustainability and a turnkey solution to ending poverty. That's what we're involved in. That's my charity. So when I went out, it all started properly when I went out to Haiti in 2010 after the earthquake. That's where I met my now wife. And she was out there as a responder. I went out there to volunteer and to donate, believe it or not, an hospital built out of porter cabins. I was working in Iraq with a security company. So I looked at her and I went, right, what can I do? You know, I wasn't after anything. No publicity, no nothing. All I spoke to somebody on the ground and said, I said, what's the situation? It was horrendous. 200,000, if you can imagine that number, 250,000 people dead. I was like, what? And I was in Iraq at the time. So I was used to people being injured and killed, but so on the basis of that, me and my business partner says, look, go out of Haiti, see what we can do. So I spoke to someone on the ground, and it was a doctor I'd worked with in the past, and he said, Billy, we need hospitals, but no one will go and build it. So we had a plan. I'll go over and donate porter cabin. I think we call them porter cabins, temporary military camp type things. So I designed an hospital, flew out to Haiti and took it in there. That's when I met my wife. So then we sat and she formed a charity called Rebuild Globally, which I'm the ambassador to even today. And basically what that was taking children, orphans mainly, and to children of poverty, give them education. You know, we're in 2010 and kids are not getting education. I just couldn't even get my head around it. So we formed the charity that gives kids a chance to go to school. Also, once they finish school, what do you do with them then? It's all right giving education, but there's no opportunities. Mm. This has to all come as a turnkey. So my wife, smartly enough, went, they need a job. We have to give them jobs. So she formed a business called Dume Designs. Initially, we were making sandals. She was making sandals, which was...
This was in Haiti.
It was an idea she got from when she went to help out in Africa. So that was her. So we had the brainstorm, right, let's get the kids into school first. While I'm working on with her doing that, she was like working 100 hours a day, doing all of it. So I'm helping her out with setting up the rebuild to get the kids into school. How do we do that legally? How do we do this? Da, da, da. And she's already 10 steps ahead of me going, right, I need to find work. And she came out with this crazy ass idea. She said to me, I'm going to make make sandals out of tires. And I'm like, of course, I'm going to say yes, because I loved her. I thought, yeah, of course you are. I come home one day and she sat in the middle of the place that we were building with a scalpel cutting feet size out of tires, literally with her hands. And I looked at her, thought, this woman's crazy. She made these tires, these sandals. And I thought, wow, that's actually not that bad. So that's where it started and evolved. She had this idea and she stuck through it through thick and thin. So now we had kids in school. Then they finished the school. Then my job was to raise some money in awareness to get job training for them. So she set up that where they could use a press, cut, use scissors, sew, all this sort of stuff. And then she formed the company called Dume, which started with sandals. Okay. So from there, that was the basics of it. That's where it all started. This crazy ass idea, employing these ladies a lot, and it was all lady run at the start, you know, and then the kids were going through school, job training, and then they had a job. And we were watching this. And what we ended up doing then, we started grow. Then she built a factory, solar powered, and again, environmentally friendly, totally thinking two steps ahead of me all the time. So we now got this factory. Beautiful factory. We bought all second-hand equipment because that's all we could afford at the time. You know, all the machinery, got all the leather. She did all the due diligence, traveled everywhere to get everything. Resources all from within countries, so we're keeping everything in there. And then we had got the whole thing going and turning. And it was to watch it. It was like, wow. Having been all around the world, seeing poverty, seeing disaster, I was now seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, as I'd call it. I thought, wow, this is amazing. And that is 70% of our life today. That's what we do. So the kids go for school, job training, then they go to Dume. Started off with sandals, basic sandals. Then we got to the stage where sandals were being sold by Kenneth Cole. You know, that's the standard.
Wow, that's amazing.
And they were making ladies' accessories, jewelry, handbags. And I watched it grow. And he was so professional. And I was like, I was kind of jealous of it, if I'm honest. I was like, how the hell did she do that? But it was amazing. And it still is amazing. But what we got now is we've got kids who've come from nothing, no food, no, some of them not even got parents, gone through the schooling, through the job training. They're working at the factory now. Some of them are managers. In fact, two of them, a girl and a guy, they're phenomenal. Unbelievable. They run the whole thing, you know, the procurement of equipment, the pay slip, the whole thing, the procurement. It's amazing. And so it's growing. So while I watch this grow, and me being me, I travel a lot. I'm always on a plane. I'm on one tomorrow, in fact. You know, I'll go to London for 2 days, back here, then Jules will join me. We'll go all over the place. Going back to London in 2 days. And I was traveling, and I'm one of these people who you'd think the amount of travel I've done, I've got it all together. I've got the best traveling kit. I haven't. I've tried for years to find the right stuff, and nothing ever seems to fit what I personally want, and I see other people want. So I had this crazy idea, and I was watching, we were over at the factory about over a year ago. I was watching how professional they were, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is truly amazing. And then I come up with this idea. I run this idea past my wife at the time. She was like, whatever. You know, they were busy enough. But then she started to listen to me and work with me. And then we designed. And I was thinking about traveling, everything I need, you know, from a card holder to a wallet to a we call them wash bags. What do you guys call them?
Toiletry bag.
Yeah, thinking about everything I need. Every day I'm traveling. And we call it an holder, you call it a duffel bag. And I'd had these duffel bags and they were so expensive. Yeah. They just didn't do, they look good. They just didn't do what I wanted to do. So then I designed it. And I did it with a military sort of piece in it. For instance, mine are different to everything else because they've got blue zips. And the blue, it stands out from a mile. One, because it looks beautiful. Two, it represents something that's deep in my heart, which was my past being in the SAS. That is a colour of our belt. It represents the oceans that we've crossed many, many times. And then while I was a real pain in the backside, I have to say, because when we were making it, I'd be in military, every stitch has got to be perfect. No, go back to that again. And I think at one stage she was going to throw me out of the factory. And I'm like, no, it's got to be military precision. It's got to be super detailed. And that's what we got. So we got to the stage where we got it all done. And I'm very, very proud to say we launch in a couple of days time on the 26th. So we're launching this product line, which is totally military inspired from myself. And it's a very, very proud. And the reason is, it's not so we can make money. It's actually to continue producing jobs in Haiti. And that's what I'm hoping, that's where it's going to go.
That's fantastic. Now you you do a lot with veterans too. If I see from your Instagram, have you ever crossed paths with Prince Harry? Cause he's very involved in veterans groups in Britain.
I personally haven't. I mean, I worked with the Royal Family many, many years ago when they came to the SAS camp. I've worked with Majesty the Queen on a number of occasions and her husband, the Duke at the time. I actually haven't worked with the children, Harry or William. But yeah. So I've looked after royalty, but mainly the Queen on a number of occasions.
Mainly the Queen. Well, we haven't met the Queen, so you're lucky. We're very impressed. And it seems like though you took that all in stride. Now, just before we leave, let's just ask you, what should we really be looking forward to on Special Forces? Like, anyone in particular we should keep an eye on that?
I'm not going to give you any great spoilers. What I'm going to say is keep your eyes wide open and watch. You're going to go, what just happened? Where did that? How did that? And again, and then you'll drop right back to strong mind. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's going to get brutal. We tell them every day, we ramp up the pressure, and we do. We put the vice on them. This is a reason behind everything. It gets physically more demanding. It gets physically and mentally more challenging. It's petrifying. You know, you look at some of the things, oh my God, you're trying to kill these people. We ain't. We're far from it. They feel that, but we're not.
Yeah, I know you're not trying to kill them, but are you guys obsessed with making sure it's very safe? There's no way that you could kill them.
Let me tell you, like I said, I told you at the start, we don't, there's no script, there's no rehearsals to any of this. The only rehearsals there are, we do it. We do it with more equipment and we do it with less safety as we would for real. We do not ask them to do anything that we wouldn't do. And then we add a little bit more safety to it. It is scary. It is dangerous. And I mean, things can get wrong. You can get injured and stuff. That's just, you can wrap people in cotton wool. And somewhere down the line, they'll catch a cold or something. You know, that's human nature. But yeah, all the tasks we physically do, all 4DS do every single task. And, you know, the way it works, we'll turn up in a country, we turn up in Jordan, and Orion. We look around and go, well, mountains, we can do this, we can do that, we can do this. And then we'll go and try it. We'll have a look at interviews. No, actually, we couldn't do that. We'll do something else. So the format gets laid out. So if like America tomorrow want to go to, like we've just done one in the jungles of Vietnam for the Brits, which launched tonight. We literally got on the ground in the jungle and went, looked around and went, right, what should we do? There's a river, there's mountains over there, there's this, there's that. And then we'll come up with the ideas based on operational experience and we'll go and set it up, try it, practice it, got it. And then when it's set up, the safety, go in and check it all, health and safety, all the ropes teams and all that, insurances to make sure that it's all safe. And then literally hours before the students turn up, one of us will run through it again, just to make sure nothing's come loose, everything's good to go. So yeah, the safety is paramount. You know, at the end of the day, this is a TV program, it's a show. You don't need anybody to get hurt. We want people to just walk away with a great experience, great memories, and doing things they never thought they'd do.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Amazing.
Well, as you say, it's already brutal. So, yes, I can't even imagine what's coming next. But everyone tune in to Special Forces World's Toughest Test. And also look out for the launch of your new collection, DeuxMaines, and it's spelled DeuxMaines. Where can our audience find?
If you follow us on Instagram, you can follow us on Instagram, DeuxMaines. .com. Sorry, what's the password? Sorry, I'm terrible. I am not IT savvy. Yeah, so if you follow DeuxMaines on Instagram, Facebook, you'll be able to see everything that we're doing. And like I said, we're launching 2 days, so don't miss it. Everybody follow us now.
Yay, and Facebook, yeah, sounds like good gift ideas with Valentine's Day coming up for
Facebook Live actually on the 25th, right? 26. Sorry, my days are all over the place. Like I said, I'm not.
It's okay.
And you've got good workouts on your Instagram too. So, you know, we can try your workouts. Okay,
please
well,
do.
Thank you. Well,
follow me and follow DeuxMaines.
Amazing.
Be there on the Instagram Live on the 26th.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for listening and tuning in. And we will be sure to catch Special Forces and the new DeuxMaines drop. Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Billy. Great to talk. Bye.
Bye-bye.